Bargainers for the UAW and Detroit automakers will get down to brass tacks when talks open next month. And Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes believes all of this is going to come down to who's looking ahead through the windshield or at the past in the rear view mirror. What do you mean by that, Daniel?
Well, I think as you go into negotiations, you can't help but think that the UAW and their membership are looking at the fact that over the past 4 years of the current contract, GM, Ford, and what is now FCA or Chrysler have made a combined $67.7 billion in profit in North America. So as a result, they're going to be looking at those numbers and saying, hey, you know, we want more. We legacy workers who haven't had a raise in 8 years in our base wage, we think we deserve a raise. And we, the second tier workers, we think we deserve a bigger raise as well.
And we know the union really had to hold its nose when it accepted that two-tier wage system.
Well, they did, but it's important to note that they did this back in 2007 before the wheels truly fell off the wagon. I mean, they were starting to wobble, certainly, back then, which is one of the reasons they did it. But, you know, the companies, meanwhile, I think are going to be looking at this and saying, look, we're in our sixth year of market expansion here. This hasn't happened since the 1960s. And to assume that what we've experienced in the past 2 or 3 years is going to be replicated in the next contract is risky, and therefore we want more flexibility. We don't want to increase our fixed costs, which is what happens when you give base wage increases, because by definition you are increasing your fixed costs. So that's going to be some of the areas they're going to be wrangling over, I think, as well as health care and how much members are going to pay of their health care premiums, which right now is only about 6% of the total cost.
You were on a conference call today with new UAW President Dennis Williams. What did you hear?
Well, I hear a guy continue to be impressed by his business-like approach to what's in front of him. Not only do they have the big three negotiations this year, they've also got John Deere, General Dynamics, 17,000 public employees, all going on at the same time. So they've got a very full plate, but I think he's very businesslike. He yet again talked about bridging the gap, which is some phraseology that he used at the bargaining convention a couple of months ago, trying to close the gap between the legacy worker pay and second-tier worker pay. Again, he makes the case for the union, I think, pretty effectively, more so than some of his predecessors. And, of course, he was asked about this merger talk that Sergio Marchionne is whipping up with General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
That has major implications for the union, potentially, if it ever gets really serious or if it ever were to happen. He didn't characterize it, but he did say, I can't go into a restaurant now without somebody asking me about Sergio Marchionne. He says, we've got a team that monitors these things, that looks at them, and they will continue to do that. But beyond that, he was pretty noncommittal.
He really has a challenge in the sense of having workers who, as you say, expect to get back of some of what they gave up in the dark days of the auto collapse. But we have auto executives who cannot fall back into the practices that got them into such trouble.
Yeah, and I think there's some wiggle room here. As I pointed out in that piece this week, we have a situation where you've got fewer workers at these companies than you had in any of our lifetimes, and yet the companies are making a lot of product. And as a result, labor is a much smaller percentage of the total cost of a vehicle. And GM and Ford particularly have their profits per vehicle are dramatically higher than they've been. The bottom line is that there's more flexibility to potentially give them some movement on base wage increases. And I don't think anybody who knows this process thinks that they're going to get done with these negotiations and not give some kind of base wage increases to both legacy and the second-tier workers. It's likely to be higher for the second-tier workers than for the legacy folks, but nevertheless, I think there's going to be movement there.
But we know that there's Mexico, and we know that the automakers and their supply base are looking south, where what do you got, maybe less than $10 an hour for labor cost?
Yeah, and he's a little pointed, as you might imagine, about Mexico, and he stopped himself a couple times, said, I don't want to offend the Mexicans here, and then he proceeded to basically talk about how they've got low pay and lax rules and a whole lot of other things. But these guys aren't blind. They can see the fact that these companies, even as they are investing in the U.S., they're investing in Mexico, and that's going to continue to be an issue. The reality is that particularly with these trade talks that were recently deep-sixed by the House Democrats, I think they recognize that Mexico is going to continue to be attractive because it has a lot of bilateral trade agreements with a lot of other countries, which makes it attractive for making vehicles there as well as in the U.S.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes with our Thursday check-in. As always, thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you.